לרגל יום האישה הבינלאומי התכנסנו אני וחברתי הטובה דוקטור נהיד ערני משני צידי האוקיינוס, שלא לומר אני בסוף מזרח ונהיד בסוף מערב, 10 שעות הבדל, לכן גם שני התאריכים השונים, כי אני דיברתי איתה בשבעה במרץ בבוקר והיא דיברה איתי בשישה במרץ בלילה. נהיד ערני מלבד היותה חברתי הטובה, היא גם אחת המומחיות המובילות באיראן, שלא לומר המובילה באיראן לענייני פרסית יהודית קדומה, או לפחות הייתה עד שהיא עזבה את איראן לפני כ7 שנים והיגרה לקנדה. יש גם לציין ששמה של נהיד, שם המשפחה של ערני, זה בפרסית מערבית עשיר, ואיראניום מואשר, אם ננסה לתרגם את זה לפרסית, יהיה איראניום ערני שודה. אז היום האיראניום שלנו הוא באמת ערני שודה. כלומר, כזה שנהיה רני. אנחנו דיברנו על נשים באיראן בכל מיני תקופות, מכיוון שגם היא כמוני קראה טקסטים וכתבה מאמרים ומומחית גם לנשים ובכלל לאיראן הטרום-אסלאמית. ואני מקווה שיהיו לנו עוד הזדמנויות לדבר באמת על הדברים שמעניינים אותנו ועל המחקרים שלנו, לא בקטע אקדמי, אלא בקטע שזה באמת דברים מגניבים. אז רוב הרעיון הוא באנגלית, ומכיוון שהשכנים שלי משפצים ולא הייתה לי הזדמנות אחרת להקליט, אז שמתי את, המשכתי את מוזיקת הפתיחה בתור אנדר, ולהשון מהעין עם.
איראניום מואשר. איראן מאז ועד היום. עם דוקטור תמר אילם גינדין.
דוז'וד בר דוסט גרמי אמה. נהיד ערני, דוקטור נהיד ערני. חלי חושלם, אז אם כאין זהמת רו ברוי מה כשידיד, או אין וחת רו פיידע כעדיד, במה הרף בזניד, או... امور ایرانی و زنان ایران را به شنوندگان اسرائیلی توضیح بدهید.
سلام، خیلی ممنونم لطف کردین، باعث افتخاری که منو قبول کردین توی برنامه‌تون. خیلی خوشحال میشم بتونم با شما صحبت کنم و در این مورد یه گپی بزنیم.
Okay, now the translation to English will be hello Nahid. Hi. it's called ta'aruf. We've talked about it in the past.
Ta'aruf ze min minhag parsi shehu ben sheker le'emet, ben sheker muskam. Hu lo bidiyuk nimus, ki ze be'emet dvarim shehem muskamim ve'rak be'mekomot mesuyamim. Ve'chelek mize ze shekshe'omrim shalom, az ze lokeh 5 dakot shel תודות והתרפסויות, וכשאומרים להתראות זה גם לוקח 5 דקות של תודות והתרפסויות, אם לא 10 דקות, וגם כשמבקשים משהו, וגם כשנותנים משהו, וגם אם אני אומרת לכם למשל שהלכתי אתמול לסרט בלעדיכם, או אני מספרת לכם על השיעור שהיה לי היום שלא הייתם בו, כי אתם לא אמורים להיות בו, אבל אני אגיד בכל זאת מקומכם היה ריק, ואז כשאתם תגידו החברים היו במקומי, אז אני אגיד לא, מה פתאום, מקומכם היה ירוק, כלומר צמחו בו עשבים מרוב שהוא נשאר ריק כי לא באתם. וכל זה כששנינו יודעים שאנחנו לא מתכוונים לזה.
So the reason I can interview you with your name and face is that you're an Iranian citizen, but you're also a Canadian citizen. You've been living in Canada for how many years now?
Yes, 7 years.
7 years, and you're not going back to Iran, even for a family visit. How come?
Exactly.
How come?
Yes, because usually the Canadians with dual, I mean, people with dual citizenships have a problem. They can be a bait in order to put them into jail and then ask for the, you know, money to release them or to ask for some, you know, points or advantages from the Canadian government. So basically that's the problem. It's not that that person is especially a political activist or civil activist. It's just that, okay, just like Zahra Kazemi, who was a photographer back in Iran, she was arrested and under torture, she was killed. And then, you know, these things happen.
Yeah, so it's better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Women, we're having this interview on March 7th. I hope I can edit it by March 8th, which is International Women's Day. We always say the date also in Persian. So let's say the Persian day too. You're talking to me on the 6th of March, which is the 15th of Isfand, and I'm talking to you on the 7th of March, which is the 16th of Isfand, because we're 10 hours apart.
Yes.
You're going to sleep after this. I'm going to work. I slept before and you worked before.
Yeah.
We're both between work and sleep. But
yes. Yeah, I don't like this time difference.
Okay. So, women in Iran are now in the headlines. The women's protest against hijab is really taking, getting a lot of public attention. And I would want you to, when did it start? And how did it start?
Well, Iranian women's quest for equality has been underway since the revolution. As women forfeited some of their rights, which they had gained through the 1975 Iran's Family Protection Law. And these laws were very progressive, and they include emphasis on limiting polygamy, child custody, and the status of women, the right of divorce, etc., etc. And upon the revolution, most of these progressive laws were replaced by Sharia law, and compulsory hijab was one of them. But then women were defiant from the very beginning, and then they took it to the streets, like on the very beginning days after the revolution, and they protested against the compulsory hijab. So yes, it's been a long time that they are fighting for their rights. The Facebook page, which is called My Stealthy Freedom by Masih Alinejad, a prominent journalist, expedited this type of defiance. At the beginning, she asked the women inside Iran to send their pictures without veil, and people became supportive of that, regardless of their gender and regardless of their belief, because there were so many religious women who sent their pictures with full hijab but with a placard written that I do not support compulsory hijab. And then husbands and fathers and brothers became supportive of this movement, which is actually a sort of civil disobedience.
What's the punishment for removing your hijab in public?
It's going to be arresting. And like in 2014 alone, despite the risk of prison, 3.4 million people were warned, were just warned, for being badly veiled, as the regime, refers to that. And this is like the figures, these are the official figures. And the risk these women take in order to protest against compulsory hijab is so big. And we heard about a few of them that were arrested and taken into custody in the past 2 months.
This is why I think the White Wednesday protest is so smart. White Wednesday protest, which was also started by Masih Alinejad a few months ago, where the women wear white hijab on Wednesdays in order to protest against compulsory hijab. This way they can't get arrested because they are wearing hijab. But Vidal Movahed, a 31-year-old mother of a 19-month-old baby, took her hijab off, completely off, on one of the White Wednesdays, December 27th, waved it on a stick. And what happened to her?
She was arrested and where she was taken. And later on, I guess that on some bail, she was released. So, and then, but then this was kind of pursued by other women as well. So they started to do the same thing in different spots, not only on Tehran streets, but on the streets of other cities, even, you know, in religious city of Mashhad or Qom. So yes, this is pretty interesting. Today, I mean, it was, I guess today or yesterday, I saw something that I was a little bit funny for me, because a few weeks back, there was this very elderly woman, little woman, taking off her hijab and going on the edge of a pole in the park, started to wave it in the public in support of, yes, White Wednesdays. And then yesterday I saw this picture of the same spot, which was fenced. I mean, that pole, little pole in the park, is now fenced. So yes, it is interesting that we see that how the reaction comes from the system and from the regime to stop the women.
Yeah, they can't fence every electricity box and every post box.
Yeah, they make a wedge. They try to make a wedge thing like on the top of the electricity box. But then in the middle of the night, on the same electricity box, some other carpenter made something that made it flat. And it was like a wedge. I don't know how to explain, but yes, it is funny. So there was this flat platform on that wedge, which facilitated standing on that electricity box for the women.
That's funny. But it's not just the hijab, the freedom of clothing they're protesting, is it?
No, exactly. It is just the sign. It is just the beginning. They are against, they are looking for equality. Women basically are considered as second-rate citizens in Iran. So they do not have the right to, they cannot like travel on their own abroad. They cannot travel abroad on their own if they are unmarried. And if they are married, they need the permission, the permit from their husband. They don't have the right of divorce. They don't have the right of custody. They can't have the custody of their children after divorce. Even if the father of the child dies, then the custody goes to the paternal grandparents. And it is all about inequality.
Wow. So the hijab is actually just a symbol. Has it always been like that?
No, not at all. In the 1975, Iran's family protection law was granted to women, and these laws were amongst the most progressive ones, especially when we regard like rights such as emphasis on the limiting polygamy and child custody and the status of women and the social status and everything. And after the revolution, most of these progressive laws were scrapped, and then they were replaced by Sharia law. And women were also required to wear veil in the public. And as I said that, they have always been defiant towards this. On the very beginning days after revolution, many women took it to the streets, and then they started to protest against compulsory hijab. You can find the relevant pictures of that protest on the internet.
Right.
Very easily.
It's not only about women's rights.
No. It is inclusive of everything to make the woman the citizen and to be entitled to all the citizenship, I would say, rights that she deserves.
Yeah, but men in Iran would also like to have more rights. I mean, people in Iran, regardless of gender, don't have rights that we deem natural.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It is true. Yes, it is true, because, you know, it's just a matter of being one of us. If you are othered, you're othered. It doesn't matter what gender you have and from what ethnicity you are. So basically, you should be one of us, and then you are supported. And if you are not one of us, you're excluded. And especially if you are from a different ethnicity, you are from a different faith, you are a woman, then it's gonna the problem is gonna escalate it as well.
Right. Okay, White Wednesday, they can't be arrested because they are wearing hijab. But taking off their hijab in public, how come they're not afraid?
I would say that they are not afraid because, the reform that the regime previously promised is now so slow that the female reformists are disappointed about it. And then they are trying to find a way to expedite this. So, yes, you're right. They are not afraid, those ones who take off their hijab. They're not afraid because basically they want a change, a real change. Unfortunately, the reformists in Iran are normalizing everything when it comes to these natural rights, as we deem as natural, but then every single woman in Iran is stripped of this right. So, yes, it is I'm done with this. I have had enough. This is that stage.
You said before that unmarried women can't leave the country at all? I didn't know that.
They need the permit. Yes, they need the permit from their... I mean, if you want to get a passport as a married woman, you need to go to a notary office and then get the permit from your husband. And then with that permit, you can go to the passport office so that the passport is going to be issued for you.
No, but if you're unmarried, you just can't leave?
If you're unmarried, no. If you're unmarried, I mean, if you're a girl, and yes, you need your father's permit. Mm-hmm. And if you're divorced, then you're good.
So actually, divorce is a thing now, right? Women like getting divorced.
Unfortunately, I don't know. I'm a little bit conservative. I would say that the divorce rate is a little bit high in Iran. And we also, there is something that is the cohabitation, which is called white marriage, is a little bit more popular in big cities. And yes, young people are favoring this type of relationship.
Why do so many people get divorced? I mean, you said that if you're divorced, you're good. You don't need anyone's permission. That's certainly a plus.
Mm-hmm. There is a but. The process of divorce in Iran takes a very, very long time. Because you don't have the right to divorce. It is the man who divorces the woman.
So for a man, it's short, and for a woman, it can be.
Yes, that's right. It depends on the mutual, agreement on what type of rights and, assets they want to share and everything. And if there is a fight between them over different types of, rights and shares, then it can take for a long time.
Do married couples in Iran have joint bank accounts or separate bank accounts?
It depends. It can be both.
Okay, because one of the things that really surprised me was the mehriye, which is the money that the man gives when he buys the woman, sort of. And then the woman sells all her rights.
No, I wouldn't, this... Yes, this is how people
That's how Westerners, yeah, that's how Westerners see it.
But it's something I would say as old as ancient Greece. Because, you know, part of my research is about marriage in ancient Iran. So I had to take a look at, you know, the marriage in the ancient world. So this type of dowry, I would say, was very common in ancient Greece. And then it was kind of abolished. And then it was very popular in ancient Iran as well. It was called kabin. And it was paid to the woman's family. But I would say that Islam rule is a little bit different. When Islam arrived in Iran, we accepted the same thing because in the Arabian Peninsula, they had the same dowry as well, this tradition of dowry. They still do. In Iran, they still do because they are all Muslims. And the other problem is that, before I get to the problem, I would say that before that, when the Islam arrived in Iran, we adapted and adopted this tradition. We kind of incorporated the Iranian tradition into the Arab tradition. So I wouldn't say that it is like 100% Arab tradition. I wouldn't say that it's now 100% something that we inherited from the ancient world. No.
It's fascinating. Can you tell me what things we inherited from the ancient world and what things we.
you.
What things we adopted from Islam? When I lecture about Iran and Israel, I use the first person.
it's very nice. You're one of us. That's good. Okay, so when it comes to dowry, the ancient world, in ancient Iran, the woman received, or the woman's family received the dowry. And at the same time, the woman had a lot of rights. It was the woman that passed the, for example, line of heritage and, you know, successorship to the family rather than the man. But with Islam and patriarchy, I wouldn't say that in ancient Iran we didn't have patriarchy. There was. But then there were a lot of different laws according to Matikanez or Dadistan, the a book of 1,000 laws.
That's how I am. You know, I start talking about modern Iran to catch the listeners, and then I go to ancient Iran because that's what's really interesting.
Yes, that's right. yes, there are a lot of laws and amendments that you can, like, go around the law. So I would say that there were a lot of things, a lot of situations in which the woman had a different type of right, totally different from what we see in Islamic era.
For example?
You're asking me a lot, and then I can try to remember. So, for example, when it comes to divorce, all right, we know that in Islamic law, the pronunciation of the sentence, "I divorce you," should be actually enunciated. So like out loud. The same thing was the same in ancient Iran. Okay, this is like one of the similarities. When the woman was divorced, in some cases, because there were several different kinds of marriages in ancient Iran. So when a woman was divorced, basically it's a little bit unclear, but my understanding is that if the woman was mother of the family, she kept her own guardian, mm-hmm. and she could be the guardian of the family as well in many cases. Not just like, you know, after the advent of Islam in Iran, because I'm not like an expert when it comes to early Islamic era in Iran, but then I would say that in modern times, when a woman divorces, it's very difficult for her. When it comes to custody of children, when it comes to claiming her rights and claiming like her passed away husband's rights and, you know, pension and everything. It's a totally a different story.
I want you to tell our listeners why you left Iran. You didn't have economic problems or?
Not at all.
Okay, so why did you leave?
It's mainly because of the children. You know, that part of the world is not stable at all. So you don't know what is going to happen next. So I wanted the stability. We wanted the stability. So that was the main reason.
Was it also something about education or?
Stability. Yeah, I would say that the education, it very much depends what person is talking about education. If you're talking to a person from, let's say, one of those Western or very far Eastern part of Iran, well, the education system there is not good because basically there is not enough budget. And then the facilities are not good. The students are studying sometimes in appalling conditions. However, when you're talking about middle-class families in big cities, then you would say, yes, the education is very good. And yes, I would say that the education in Iran is very good. That's why we export brains out of Iran. I used to teach IELTS and TOEFL preparation courses back in Iran, and I would say that I had hundreds of students from the University of Sharif and University of Tehran. At the time, it was the reformist President Khatami in office, but a lot of them wanted to leave the country and continue education in North America. They left the country. I doubt that they came back.
Yeah, brain export is one of the big problems in Iran now.
Mm-hmm.
How did you leave the country?
It was just legal. It was normal, just like any other immigrants.
Okay, how did you get a visa?
How long did it take?
Yeah.
5 years.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How come 5 years? What's the process for an Iranian to get a visa abroad?
Depending on what nationality you are and from what part of the world you apply for, it takes a long time. For some other nations, it takes like 2 years, especially Europeans. But I heard from Vietnamese that it takes 7 years for them to immigrate to Canada. Yes. For the Brazilians, it's about the same number of years, between 5 to 7, if they want to immigrate as a skilled workers.
Wow, and if you just want to go as a tourist?
Because now President Trump has banned Iranians from the United States, well, on the paper, I would say, because I have seen like so many other Iranians who got visa to the United States with no trouble. But on the paper, it is like banned. So Canada has always tried to play as the nice guy. So they try to nowadays give really good multiple entry visas to people. Type of political correctness is killing this country. You don't know if you can use the pronoun he or she. No, I'm telling you. Have you, Potomar, have you heard anything about Jordan Peterson?
No, but in Israel we have Merav Michaeli, and in Israel every verb and every adjective has a grammatical gender. So even if you say went or you went, mm-hmm.
and
there's
a
grammatical
just like Arabic.
Gender. Right, just like Arabic.
Yeah.
So there is a parliament member, Merav Michaeli, who's trying to change that, and it's so ridiculous as a linguist.
It is. Because
the unmarked gender is also used for the masculine. You can't change a language by politics.
Exactly, that's the point. And one friend of mine told me, he is Brazilian, he said that his wife was in a gathering and she started to talk about him, as an addressing and like yes, addressing him as my husband. And then the speaker there said, no, you've got to say my partner. Why are you talking about, why are you like using the my husband? It is too much for me. And well, cut it off as well. I mean, everything about Canada. It's true, political correctness is killing this country. I don't like it. Nobody likes it. It is as if I am muzzled. You know, yes, we are muzzled. And I feel so disappointed because I believe that I was muzzled back in my country because I couldn't, you know, criticize the regime. I couldn't criticize Islam. I couldn't criticize whatever I thought was had to be criticized. And here I am muzzled by all these leftists' political correctness. So if I criticize Islam, basically I am labeled as Islamophobic or a person with Islamophobia, which is ridiculous because I'm a Muslim-born woman who happened not to, you know, practice Islam. But at the same time, you know, you cannot label me as an Islamophobic person. I am not. I know what is going on in that type of Islam that I know, which is Shia Islam in Iran. So I cannot even criticize it here. If I criticize, they don't listen, or they are kind of becoming passive aggressive because they are very, very, very polite.
Very polite. Hmm. You also mentioned the problem once of Canada is relatively easy to get a visa to immigrate to.
Not the immigration, the tourist visa.
You said that people meet the people who tortured them in prison on the streets of Canada.
Hmm. Oh, yes. I remember that. I said that Canada basically has become a haven for everyone that can come with loads of money, and this money is through money laundry, and it is regardless of their, you know, nationality. They could be Chinese, they could be Iranian, they could be Korean, whatever.
Right. You can buy Canadian citizenship.
Yes, especially if you have loads of money, you can come as an investor, and then you don't even need to know the language. You can hire a translator or whatever, an interpreter. So, yes, I said that now there are so many people in Canada from the government side, and they are apologists on the internet and in Farsi-speaking media.
Yeah, when you say from the government, you mean people in Canada from the government of the Islamic Republic?
Iran. Yes, yes, that's true. Thanks for clarification. And yes, and then at the same time, there are a lot of young people who escaped the country because of the 2009 disputed election. And they arrived here as refugees. Yes, they are asylum seekers. And then I think that on the streets of Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, you are walking and then you may run into your, you know, jailer or to your persecutor. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, that it's, let's say the good guys can get asylum, but the bad guys can get citizenship because you can buy citizenship.
Yeah, yes, so true.
Are there also jailers and people who torture people in jail who get asylum? Or is it just...
They most probably arrive here under, you know, new names with, new titles. And everything can be, you know, fabricated as of their assets, their properties, their names, their... That's what's happening.
What do you think should happen, or what do you think should be done in order to liberate Iran? Do you think Iran should be liberated?
Of course. This type of liberation movement started 150 years ago with the Constitution Revolution in Iran. At the time, the intelligentsia and then the intellectuals were supportive of the liberation of women, and then they were supportive of women's rights because they knew the reform, they knew about the reforms in Ottoman Empire at the time. They had traveled around Europe. They saw that it was so modern at the time, and then they want that type of modernization and modernity in Iran. So yes, they started it. It was successful, but unfortunately with the Islamic Revolution, we sort of sacrificed everything for the ideology. And yes, the country should be liberated. It is the people that have to take actions. You know, it is not something that is happening overnight.
Of course.
The path, the route to democracy in many countries took hundreds of years. I don't say that it should take 100 years or hundreds of years because we live in the technology era. So,
and we want to see it in our lives.
Yes, that's right. It's going to be faster, but then it is something that is organic. So people are going to find democracy through education, self-education, public education, through studying history. That's what people don't like. Usually they think that history is like the past, but if we don't study about the past, then how are we going to learn about the present or future? So anyway, if we don't want to make the same mistakes, we have to know all about the history and what happened at least in the past 150 years, and then try not to make the same mistakes. So yes, it is possible, but it should be by the people and within the people.
Do you see any leadership that can be an alternative now, or is it one of the things that should happen?
Before we go on to this part, I should say that no liberation and no democracy was fulfilled without the international support. So the international support is very important. And by international support, I mean, like, you know, the verbal support that, okay, people of Iran, we know what is going on in your country, and we support that. We support you. Unlike what happened in 2009, when people were killed on the streets of Tehran, and then Obama was secretly sending a letter to the leader.
Yeah, but I always say that Israelis should be very careful about expressing explicit support.
Yes, because it's going to link the people to, you know, sort of conspiracy against the people themselves. Yes, you asked about the leader. There is a big, I would say, controversy of who the leader should be. But... the only option for now who is sort of, who is famous and is well known is Prince Reza Pahlavi. But again, there are a lot of people who are against this or are against him. There are some who say that, well, he hasn't performed any administrative tasks, so we don't know, we cannot rely on him or his qualifications. There are some people who are against, like, individualistic, you know, approach, so they say that we need a group of leaders. But yes, that's pretty much what is going on among the Iranians.
Yeah, and you also said that the struggle for liberation started with the constitutional revolution, which means the Pahlavi family was part of this process, but not the end of it.
No, they were not the part of constitutional revolution per se. But
no, part of the struggle for a better future.
No, not even that. But afterwards, Reza Shah was the only person, I would say, and it is not what I say, I quote Dr. Ajudani, the prominent historian, who said that the hero of constitutional revolution is Reza Shah, because he was the one that actually fulfilled all the goals of modernization of Iran.
So he was part of the promoting Iran, but didn't bring it to democracy.
But... you know, I would say that he brought democracy as well, but relatively. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because let's talk about his peers, his contemporary peers. At the time that Europe was in the middle of the World War, and there was the fascism and racism, but we didn't have such thing in Iran. It was very interesting, particularly because I saw one tweet which said that the true feminist, the first true feminist, was Reza Shah himself, because he was the one that wanted the women to enter the society and participate in the social activities. So I think that, yes, he brought democracy relatively compared to what was going on in Europe, what was going on in, let's say, Latin America, in Korea, and neighboring countries.
Yeah, I mean, Iran. Afghanistan, which was a symbol of feminism once.
Yes. At the time, Reza Shah was in power. Zahir Shah was the king of Afghanistan, and then they were pretty progressive. But with the Islamist, you know, wave, then everything like reversed. Everything like went back to 100 years ago at the time.
Yeah. What did Reza Shah do to include women in society?
A lot of people refer to this as kashf-e hijab, which means that removing hijab, but I do not consider it as kashf-e hijab. Was removing hijab because, well, we've got to go one step back. During Qajar era, the intellectuals knew what was going on as of reforms in Ottoman Empire. And the Ottoman Empire reforms had started, I would say, in early 18th century. And then little by little, they added like different administrative parts in order to eliminate the authority of one person, and also they also changed the dress code. They forbade turbans, and then they said that you can wear that type of Egyptian hat. So this was something that Qajar the Shah of Qajar, Nasiruddin Shah, particularly wanted to do with the women. And that's why when you look at the pictures at the time, you see like, you know, women with sort of hijab, but with mini skirts. But inside haram, not in the public. So it was something that the Iranians were aware of, that we have to change this dress code. This is so regressive. This is
I will put on the post that accompanies the podcast, I will put one of these Dafe Qajar, so they see the women.
Yes, okay, yeah, go ahead. And then Reza Shah came and expedited whatever Nasiruddin Shah and the other, you know, Qajar Shahs failed or longed to do but couldn't because of the corruption. For example, Nasiruddin Shah knew that Iran needed a transportation system. But I would say there were so many conspiracies and there was so much corruption that... And he was whimsical, yes? Mm-hmm. And, you know, two things. So the corruption and then his whimsical character. These two didn't let him be consistent and persistent in achieving whatever he wanted as of modernization of Iran. So this was Reza Shah that actually fulfilled whatever they couldn't.
Okay, I want to talk to you a lot more, but you have to sleep and I have to go to work. So one last thing. Mm-hmm. Iran was liberated. What's the first thing you do? Where's the first place you go back?
Well, you know, it's a tough question because it doesn't mean that it is liberated, then the the country is like a heaven now. The next day, there is much, much important thing to consider, which is like to rebuild and renovate the whole system, the whole thing. So I have always thought about it, but I never find an answer to this. Like, if this happened, then what would I do? If, for example, the next day after the regime has changed, what would I do? I have never thought about it because I think, okay, they go, but we have already witnessed the 1979 revolution, right? Then there is the chaos. There is, like, you know, it is really, really scary to think about it. This is what we want, but we've got to be realistic.
Yeah, it's a scary desire.
Yes, absolutely.
So there's a lot to do. Thank you so, so much for talking
yeah,
to
my
me
pleasure.
And my listeners. Now that you can't, you're not going back to Iran anyway, and you have a Canadian passport, I hope to see you here. We have a guest room.
Thank you so much. I hope so. Looking forward to that.
Thanks so much, really.
My pleasure.
וחסכנו לכם את הבדיחה הקבועה והמתבקשת של 10 דקות. פרידה, התרפסויות, תודות. ועוד 10 דקות, תודה, התרפסויות, תודות. באופן חד פעמי ולרגל יום האישה אנחנו לא נסיים בשיר של קיוסק, אלא בשיר שכתב מזיאדה סמיעי, שהוא פעיל זכויות אדם, ישב גם בכלא כמובן, וזה קוראים לזה הימנון השוויון, אבל זה בעצם שיר ששרות פעילות זכויות אדם באיראן ביום האישה. יש לכם גם וידאו של זה יחד עם תרגום של שלוש פעילות חסרות היג'אב במטרו, וקישור לוידאו שממנו אני הקלטתי את השיר הזה, שיש לו קליפ מאוד יפה שהוא לקט של נשים עם היג'אב על מקל.
אתם יכולים למצוא את הפודקאסט איראני מועשר בכתובת podcast.zeresh.co.il. אימייל ליצירת קשר iranium@zeresh.co.il. ואם אתם רוצים אקטואליה איראנית מהמאה ה-21, תוכלו למצוא אותה בבלוג חדר 404, room404.net, בטור של דוקטור תמר אלעם גינדין, מהנעשה באיראן.
איראניום מואשר.
ההסקט, פודקאסט של דוקטור תמר אילם גינדין. אורחת בסקייפ, דוקטור נהיד רני. מנחה ברוחו, עידו קיינן. נעימת פתיחה ואנדר, עיבוד של ברק אולייר, להמנון אי איראן. קריין פתיח וסגיר, נתנאל טוביאן. שיפוצים השכנים מלמטה. וקריין קרדיטים, רן בן דוד, שזה אני.
חודה נגעתו.
להתראות.
Goodbye.